presenting the 20th anniversary edition of The Great Game of Business, The Only Sensible Way to Run a Company. Written by Jack Stack with Bo Burlingham. Narrated by Jack Stack. Introduction to the 20th anniversary edition.
I think that in most people's hearts, they want to write a book, and most people can. But here's some advice. Don't write a business book. Write a Western or a romantic novel instead. Anything but a business book. Why? Because few people will keep your typical novel. They read the book, and then they get rid of it. They rarely dog-ear it, highlight it, or underline it. It's almost as if time stands still when you write a business book. It's unlikely that someone will bring a mystery or a romance novel back to you 20 years later and ask you what you meant by what you wrote on page 121 or whether you're still doing the things you mentioned on page 67. When you write a business book and profess to practice what you preach, you're permanently putting your reputation on the line. Plus, your readers might actually do something with the advice you wrote about. That's an awesome responsibility to live with. 20 years ago, Bo Burlingham and I wrote a book called The Great Game of Business. We weren't trying to do much more than document how we, at Springfield Remanufacturing Corporation in Springfield, Missouri, were operating our business, which was focused at that time primarily on remanufacturing truck and automobile engines. We were a classy garage shop. But what really made SRC different was that our business wasn't run in the traditional top-down, command-and-control way most other companies were, and still are. We had built a repeatable system that enabled our associates to run the company, a business of business people, as I like to call it, where everyone gets a chance to grab the brass ring if they choose to do so. What's in a name? The name we use for our leadership system, the Great Game of Business, also known as the Great Game or the GGOB, has caused a lot of head scratching over the years, especially by people who think that it trivializes business by equating it with a game. Business is serious, they say, where people's lives, let alone life savings, are at stake. It's a fair point. We use the word game for our system because we wanted to find a way to make business approachable and less intimidating to our associates working on the shop floor or in an office. Business is not an art or a science. It's a competitive undertaking with rules, winners and losers, ways of keeping score, and all the elements of luck and talent. It doesn't have to be an instrument of exploitation or a tool of greed, and you don't need an MBA to understand it. Given all that, we figured there wasn't any reason we couldn't set up a company so that everybody could play the game together and share the rewards. We wanted to demystify business. The truth is, when we still worked for International Harvester, we were great at building products like engines and tractors, but nobody had ever taught us how to build a company. I'll never forget a guy that worked in the factory floor who ran a drill press. His job was to literally figure out how to make the perfect hole by correcting for millimeter-wide variances. Nothing more, nothing less. You can imagine my surprise when someone told me that that same drill press operator was actually a self-made millionaire who had built his wealth through savvy real estate investments. Here was this credible entrepreneur working under our noses, and all I had this guy doing was drilling holes. What a wasted opportunity. This haunted me for a long time because we had missed out on using this drill press operator's full range of talents. We only asked him to drill the perfect hole, not about how he thought we could build a better company. For 33 years, we only had him keep his head down thinking about control charts, measurements, and throughputs. He had given us his skills, but we had lost the opportunity to tap his full intellectual capacity. What we didn't realize at that time was that by failing to tap the strengths of every individual in our company, we were heading down a dead end by dumbing people down. Our wake-up call came when International Harvester told us it was shutting down our plant. When we took the opportunity to buy the company for ourselves in 1983, we knew we needed a smarter way to run our business. The old way didn't work. We needed something that was the opposite of the command and control model that we had been taught and which had been used for years and years. If we were even going to have a shred of a chance to make it on our own, we needed to find a way to tap the strengths of every individual in the company. In those early days, none of us knew squat about business. It was really, really hard to break free from our old ways. Even though we owned the company, there was still an attitude of us versus them between the workers and the managers. You still had people pointing fingers and waiting for commands. We had plenty of job descriptions that could tell you the size, measurements, and tooling you needed to make the perfect hole. But there was nothing in that description that was tied to the success of the company as a whole. That's where we fell short. Even though we were owners, nothing really had changed. We were still experiencing the hangover from the Industrial Revolution. We weren't moving forward. We were just going backward. It was an example of how devastating the command and control model truly was. It wasn't until after we appealed to everybody's competitive spirit that we began to see change take place. It's a universal law of nature that if you pull a group of people and ask them their opinion on just about anything, you rarely get everyone to agree, except when it comes to winning. Everybody likes to win, and no one likes to lose. That's why we tried to open the business up using the analogy of games, things that people are interested in having fun doing. Work is boring, but people love the idea of a game or competing. Call it a hook if you want. It was all born out of frustration about how to teach people the metrics of business. We wanted to find a way to get people to apply the same skills they were using to build the perfect tractor to also build the perfect company. We needed to change our focus so that the company was our product. The Great Game of Business became an accelerated learning process we used to bring about a cultural and behavioral change and take down the walls that our command and control system had created. When the light bulbs started to come on, and we really began thinking about how we could build a great company together, the transformation was incredible. By the time we wrote the original book in 1992, the results were already staggering. Revenues had grown from $16 million to $83 million, and the company's value had skyrocketed from $100,000 to $25 million. Just as importantly, our employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP, had grown to the point where hourly workers who had been with SRC from the beginning had holdings worth as much as $35,000. But beyond any specific numeric goal, we were very vocal in that first book about our goal that everyone who worked at the plant would have a chance to buy a house of his or her own. That was a heavy objective for a bunch of guys and gals with grease in their fingernails and sweat on their brows. It also brought us a lot of attention over the years. I can't tell you how many times people who had read the original book have asked me how that house thing worked out. I'm proud to report that the average ESOP account for our original hourly workers topped $400,000 in 2012. In Springfield, Missouri, that's a house, a lake house, a bass boat, and a pickup truck. The most important thing is that they know how to achieve their dreams. That's the real secret of the great game of business. All the same, we never stopped marching forward. We only got bigger and stronger in the years since the original book was published. We started this process a long time ago, but it's never finished. The more we play, the more we learn. The more we fix, the better we get. It's like working in a living laboratory. A real critical component of our success was that the more we taught people, the more they taught us. The more we opened things up, the more people wanted to know. It was contagious. In a command and control system, people ask questions because they don't know what to ask. But when you are collectively trying to build a great company, you ask hard questions. And when everybody respects the people asking those questions, you get stronger because you have to work harder to come up with the answers. It still surprises the heck out of me about how transformative it is when the lights go on in somebody's head and they just get it. With the help of the great game of business, the people at SRC have continued to be profitable every year since we got our start back in 1983. SR sales combined revenues have grown to over $450 million. Just as importantly, the company has created thousands of jobs while building more than 60 diversified businesses over the past 30 years. Most of the SRC companies remanufacture products for the agricultural, industrial, construction, truck, marine, and automotive markets. We've diversified into core management, failure analysis, reverse engineering, logistics, kitting and packaging, and warehouse and distribution. Most would advise you to stay within your core competencies. To the contrary, we have been in banking, furniture, biotech, clothing, retail, and software. That growth and diversity has helped drive the share price of SRC stock from 10 cents in 1983 to $348 today. That's a 348,000% growth rate if you're counting. To frame that another way, if you had put $1,000 in a Standard & Poor's index fund shares back in 1983, you would have about $8,434 today. If you invested $1,000 in shares of Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, over the same time frame, your stake would be worth about $113,000. Not a bad return on your money. But if you had invested your $1,000 in the people of SRC back in 1983, you'd be worth an estimated $3.4 million today. That's incredible. Changing perspectives. The cumulative effects of the great game of business didn't just stop at the stock price. What I've noticed over the years is that when things are going well and when people are feeling good about themselves, they begin to feel good about others as well. It's infectious when you get on a roll. You begin to do things first at home and then out in the community to make sure you don't lose that feeling. You begin to pay it forward, which is something the media somehow seems to forget when they start attacking successful businesses. As an example of what I mean, I asked our human relations team at SRC to find out how many of our associates serve in volunteer organizations throughout our community in Springfield, Missouri. When they told me that we had more than 115 of our people serving in a range of executive positions that included everything from a school district board member to a United Way organizer, I was simply blown away. And that doesn't count all the folks like our chili cook-off king, those who coach soccer and little league teams, and everyone else who gives back to the community in their own way. You build wealth, distribute it, and then continually recirculate it from generation to generation throughout your community. When you add it all up, isn't this what the brighter side of capitalism is all about? I believe that people who invest their time in building a business are just as important as the people who invest money. That's not always a popular belief within the business community. A lot of people will say that because they risked it all, they deserve all the rewards. The investor who puts in $1,000 gets $2.9 million, but the worker who spends 33 years on the line only gets his wages? To me, this is the darker side of capitalism. What differentiates the great game of business is that it gives the associates in a company the chance to grab the brass ring and not just settle for arm wrestling over wages. The people who invest their time should be given similar opportunities to reap rewards as the person who invested their money. The great game of business addresses the notion that the longer you stay with the company and the more time you invest, the greater chances are of reaping your rewards if the venture is successful. The only sensible way to run a company. I think one of the key reasons the original book was so popular was because the people who read it said, "I knew it. I knew this was the right way to run a business, but I wasn't allowed to do it." This book says it's okay to do it. Or, "I was doing some of these things already, but I never made the connection as to why they were important. Now I get it." That's heady stuff, and got people really interested in what we were doing. The result was that at the same time we were opening our books and teaching business to our associates, we were also opening our company to other people from literally all over the world. We felt compelled to share and help other companies get started playing the game because it made such a difference to us. And the more we open up our business to others, the more accepted the great game became within SRC itself. The fact that people from Europe, Africa, Asia, and South America would travel for thousands of miles to learn what we were doing helped validate our system and encouraged our associates to dig deeper. The more we shared with others, the better at the great game we became. The reciprocal effect was amazing. At first, we would give tours. We just let people in and allowed them to talk to whomever they wanted. Then we started holding seminars where we shared some of the tools we were using to teach our associates how to play the great game. Year after year, scores of people would come visit us and tell us, "Yes, this is exactly what we need." Those seminars eventually grew into an annual conference we now call the Gathering of Games, an event that also celebrated its 20th anniversary in 2012. In total, more than 15,000 people from more than 5,000 companies from literally every industry you can think of, including health spas, pizza restaurants, hospitals, and even members of our government, have visited our facilities or attended our conferences and seminars over the past 20 years. Eventually, in true SRC style, We also recognize that there was a real opportunity to build a training and education program, which we also named the Great Game of Business, that could help teach and reinforce the rules of the Great Game, both inside and outside of SRC. Today, the Great Game of Business, you can visit them at greatgame.com, sits at the center of a vast community of people spread around the globe who believe in the Great Game of Business. Why the Great Game of Business matters? One message that I wish I emphasized more in the original book was how freeing the Great Game becomes for leaders. Too often I see leaders who are afraid to come out of their office without their tie perfectly straight, or who suffer strokes because they're so stressed out from feeling like they have to know every answer to every problem. People think that as a leader, they always have to make the right decision, something that terrifies them. But leaders don't have to have all the answers. They need to know where to go. What I didn't know 20 years ago was the sheer impact that results from tapping the power of teamwork and collaboration by trusting, delegating, and ensuring that everyone knows his or her role. I just thought working together as a team was the right thing to do. It was common sense. But what I didn't realize at the time is that the Great Game of Business allows anyone, regardless of his or her position inside the company, to make a difference. It frees people. The Great Game also matters because it helps build leaders. And we have built an incredible group of leaders at SRC over the past 30 years. That's why we've been able to build such a diverse range of companies over the years. I can't tell you how many times I've heard from other business people about how they had to bypass an incredible opportunity because they didn't have the people on board to do it. If leaders are so important, then how come we aren't teaching people to lead all the time? Why don't we have an everyday system that works on giving people the tools they need to become leaders? By using the Great Game of Business, we can delegate information to people responsible for making decisions. People appreciate their jobs more when they are given the opportunity to make a difference. The Great Game of Business matters because we use knowledge and communication to teach and build leaders. Then we give people who are ready the chance to lead. Historically, we've adopted this idea that people need to be managed, which is reinforced by business books and gurus who have never run a business. But I believe deep in my heart that people don't like to be managed. The idea of working a system instead of a hierarchy is that when you have a variance or deviation, you attack the reason for the discrepancy and not the person. But the opposite is also true. When someone exceeds a standard, no one can swoop in and steal their recognition. That's because everyone sees where he or she fits in. The Great Game then becomes the foundation for a company's reward and recognition system. Credit and acknowledgement goes to those who deserve it. Nobody is stealing accomplishments or results. You never see anyone taking credit for something someone else did. In this system, you have ownership of your results. That kind of behavior grows people. Then they grow the company. To the doubters. Despite the success of the Great Game of Business at SRC and companies around the world, it's astounding how many people insist that this system won't work in their company. Believe me, I've heard all the excuses. They range from a fear of disclosing information to competitors to the notion that employees simply aren't interested or don't have the ability to think like business people. It makes me sad that people have this fear. As George Genron, the former editor of Inc. magazine, put it so eloquently, the reason people don't practice the Great Game is because they have too many secrets in their company. I believe these people are missing the opportunity of a lifetime to build a great company. A key theme of our second book, A Stake in the Outcome, was emphasizing what happens when you stop dumbing your people down and have them focus on more than just making products and services. If you ask people to build great companies and give them the information they need to do it, you'll get great products and services as a result. The only way you can actually experience success is when your people understand the big picture, not just the small frames. Two sure ways to kill a company are through arrogance and ignorance. Keeping employees in the dark about the company's financial health only stirs the rumor mill. I believe that people have answers to all the questions that business owners don't want to deal with. Maybe you don't want to share the books because you don't want people to know your profits and how large or small they might be. But in the absence of real information, people will fill in the blanks with their own numbers, and they'll be wrong. When people lack facts, they fill the void with fiction, often mistakenly believing that a company's owners are lining their basement with gold bricks. It's been my experience that the numbers people make up are off by a factor of 6 times. At SRC, for example, we surveyed our associates before we began playing the great game of business, and they thought our profits were between 40 and 50%, when we actually made between 3 and 5%. Once they knew the truth, I had one associate ask why we were even in business. But once the truth is known, you can see a behavioral change where people are much more willing to contribute to make things better. When business owners hide the numbers, especially when they're bad, they're doing a disservice to their associates and to themselves. When somebody unexpectedly gets a pink slip as they walk towards a parking lot, they're wishing that they could have done something about it if they had only known. I know, because once upon a time, I didn't understand the critical nature of the big picture. It was only after trying to find financing to buy our company that I realized that while I knew just about everything about how to rebuild an engine for a bulldozer, I didn't know anything about how to build value in a company. My aha moment came when I learned to evaluate our business like an investor or a buyer would. I also came to realize that almost anyone could be taught to be a business person and a leader. We invented the great game as a way to help our associates build confidence in becoming business people by running a repeatable system built on 3 principles. 1, every employee should be given the measure of business success and taught to understand them, know and teach the rules. 2, every employee should be expected and enabled to act on their knowledge to improve performance. Follow the action and keep score. 3, every employee should have a direct stake in the company's success and risk of failure. Provide a stake in the outcome. If you explain to everyone how your business works and why you're moving the numbers in the right direction leads to more reward and recognition, magic happens. This is how you create what I like to call psychic ownership within the minds of all your associates. Because you have trusted someone with the information, they feel a commitment and a sense of ownership to act on it. Why would anyone commit to action or make a decision if they haven't been given enough information? While opening the books is essential to playing the great game of business, it is actually just a component of the overall system. I think a lot of people have come to use the phrase open book management, which was coined in 1990 by John Case in Inc. magazine, interchangeably with playing the great game, and it has stuck. In fact, in 2009, when Inc. dubbed me the father of open book management, I saw it as kind of a curse. The definition of open book by itself implies a company is merely sharing financial information with its associates. Sharing this information does not necessarily mean those associates understand or realize how their work affects the numbers. Because you have a profit-sharing program in your company, for instance, doesn't necessarily mean that everyone knows how to create profits. There is a reluctance to put a name besides a forward-looking number. I don't know how you run a company without forecasting. We found that the more information you share with people, the more they can plan and improve on the accuracy of their forecast. The whole idea of a forecast is projecting where you want to go and making the commitment to each other to get there. You're not making up a number to please a boss. You're making a commitment to take a journey together. This is a beautiful thing. An accurate forecast takes the uncertainty out of the process and sets an expectation for yourself to live up to. If you can control a forecast, you can control the world. I remember one awed CEO who, after his associates started forecasting the results, told me, "I can't believe there is this much information inside my own company." With the great game of business, the players themselves track, forecast, and identify the biggest weaknesses standing in the way of a company's success. The secret to changing culture lies in the simple act of repetition, repetition, repetition. It's not only the planning. It's not only the bonus program. It's not just the equity sharing. It's the repetition. It's nailing down the routine and getting people to forecast accurately week in and week out. That's how people learn and how cultures change. It's common sense business management, and it works. Will the great game of business work for you? Someone once told me that somewhere around 10,000 new business books come out every year. That's a lot of dead trees. I'm no saint because I used to read as many of them as I could. Whether it was Total Quality Management, Six Sigma, or Management by Objectives, I spent 15 years looking for answers and ideas to run our business better. And every year, there was a new practice to learn. While there is value in what these processes can teach you, none of them are the whole solution on their own. This belief was confirmed for me after I read Beyond Performance Management by Steve Player and Jeremy Hope. I wasn't all that surprised to learn that just 30% of change programs, according to the authors, succeed. And that includes the balanced scorecard, benchmarking, customer relations programs. The authors spent an entire chapter on open book management. As I said earlier, even open book management is also not an end in itself. It wasn't until I went through the process of borrowing capital that I realized that the financials never go away. They've been with us since the beginning of business. But so few people can read or make sense of them today. While managers like me were looking for systems to help us, the answer was right in front of us. You can't have a healthy company if you don't have a healthy balance sheet. How do we miss something as basic as this? That's why at SRC we embrace the financials instead of hiding from them. Better yet, we found a way through the great game to make the numbers a part of the very lifestyle and the culture of our company. It breaks my heart when people read this book or come to visit us in Springfield and leave with only a piece of the great game of business. Some of the managers and executives like our bonus programs. Others like how we run huddles or our open book philosophy. So they bring that back to the office on Monday. And when they do, they see results for a while. But often after a few years, it gets boring and everyone goes back to running things the way they did before. The point is that you can't have an effective bonus program if you don't have a forecasting system that takes people forward to where they want to be. You can't just keep score. You need to get people involved. It's like people read the book and then pull out whatever components appeal to them without recognizing that each of the components of the great game of business is designed to work within a system as a whole. It's only when you combine all the steps that you truly get sustainability. What we recognized at SRC back in 1983 is that we needed to quit trying to plug holes with Band-Aids and instead lay the foundation for a whole new operating system for the company. That's what the great game of business is all about. I'll be the first to admit that playing the great game of business isn't easy, especially if you've already been in the business for a while. It takes real courage to put aside everything you've been taught or break free from the bad habits you may have fallen into. Doubters over the years have also said that our system is too focused on the numbers and not enough on the softer side of running a business, like delivering great customer service or building a great culture. Let me tell you, we have some of the biggest and toughest customers around. But they don't just love our products and services, they love our people. When you focus on building a great company, you have to provide great service and products to make it happen. Our system helps us avoid arrogance by forcing us to go out into the marketplace and find out what our customers want from us, which we then can deliver in a timely fashion with the intention to quality. That's how we make customers happy. Twice a year, we go through a process we call high involvement planning, where we ask everyone in the organization to sign off on the direction we're heading, a process we discuss in more detail in Chapter 8, coming up with the game plan. We look at the economy, the industry, and the competition. We bring the marketplace to our people so they can make some tough decisions. They all vote on the annual plan, and they only agree with it if they believe in it. It all starts not in the boardroom, but with each other. Once you get somebody's thumbs up on a decision, it becomes a lot harder for him or her to criticize, or Monday morning quarterback you later on. If our people want the Cadillac of health insurance plans, that's great, because they understand the impact that choice will have on their bottom line and on the company stock price, something I guarantee that every single associate in our company can quote for you every day of the week. We've also been serving our associates every 6 months for 30 years about how satisfied they are with their jobs and the company as a whole. Back in the early days, the scores told us that we had some work to do. These days, our engagement scores average about 85 out of 100. The other 15 makes us stop and think. It's also fascinating and validating to hear from other companies out there who are playing the great game. Getting the chance to connect with managers and employees playing the game from literally all over the world is one of the greatest benefits at our annual conference. I've lost count on how many stories I've heard where a business has turned to the great game of business as a last resort, after they used up every other quick fix they could think of, which then spurred them on to outrageous results. The best metaphor I can think of to explain what happens is this. I believe everyone has two flywheels inside their brain. One of the flywheels is our creative side, where we get great ideas for a business or for a book. This flywheel turns constantly at 6,000 RPMs. On the other side, we have a financial flywheel. For most of us, this turns at 60 RPM. But to get successful results, we need to get the financial flywheel humming along at a much faster clip. When you can do that, that's when you can achieve that remarkable outcome. Why we wrote another book. Tackling this update to the great game of business was like performing a balancing act between messing something up that is good and is working and cleaning it up. When Rich Armstrong and Steve Baker, the president and vice president of the great game, gently prodded me to think about writing a 20th anniversary edition of the great game of business, I felt all the blood drain out of my face. Writing the original and its follow-up, A Stake in the Outcome, which was published in 2001 with Bo Burlingham, were unbelievably challenging, as well as ultimately deeply rewarding. It was not something I was sure I was ready to do again. But Rich and Steve won me over. Why? Because they think that the world of business that I love is under attack. As I write this, not only are entrepreneurs and small business owners still struggling to recover from our nation's most recent recession, we continue to slog through an uncertain political environment where no one seems to know how to create jobs. Back in the 1980s, media people like Tom Brokaw were telling us that global competition would be the downfall of the United States. That broadcast haunts me to this day. It's no different today, as politicians and members of the media seem to compete for the chance to tell us how badly we're losing to our competitors in China and India. But I wholeheartedly disagree with these critics. In fact, if you take an objective look at the economy over the past 30 years, you'll see that we've had an incredible run on productivity because a lot of folks dug down deep to make things happen, at least until we got tripped up in 2008. And that stumble was caused, at least in part, by our society's lack of economic literacy and transparency. If we were all more economically literate and transparent, the events of 2008 might not ever have happened. Look, we've been very fortunate in SRC to have the kind of run we've had over the past 30 years. And we owe a great deal of that success to this system we have committed to tweak and improve upon over that time. I think the results I shared earlier speak for themselves. If you're a business owner or an entrepreneur looking for answers on how to weather this latest storm or prepare yourself for the next one by growing your business and creating jobs, why do that alone? Why not appeal to the highest level of thinking on the part of your associates by trying the system described by the great game of business? What's so gratifying to me is that while the great game was a foundation for us to save and create jobs, we are now creating opportunities for our children in the workplace. This culture continues and the fires keep burning. After 30 years, we now have associates working with us that don't know of any other way of running a company. We've been doing it for so long. Those folks have grown up in a business of business people, which has helped speed up the evolution and the great game at all levels of the company. We want to keep creating leaders who can build great companies. We need strategists who can make changes, start the diversification process, and sell. We need change agents with strong leadership skills. We need people who can build relationships, and we need people who are hungry to develop their talent. It's both exciting and nerve-wracking to watch our next generation of players hatch new plans and dream about the future. It's exciting because they literally get what it means to build and grow a business because they are simply executing on the system we have in place. It's nerve-wracking because even though I might know better, I have to let them learn by making their own mistakes along the way. Maybe stepping in only when they might be headed off a cliff. What's new? In this revised and expanded print edition, we've tried to strengthen the original book by outlining the system and describing the implementation process better, and providing an interactive Get in the Game guide at the end of this book. Having the tools and resources web-based will allow us to keep the content dynamic and up-to-date. We've learned a lot over the past 30 years about how to help others weave the Great Game of Business principles into their organizational DNA. The result is that there is a massive community of players out in the workplace, along with lots of resources that you can tap into for help in starting to play the great game. You don't have to tackle this alone. The past 30 years have been a hell of a ride, and I'm truly humbled by all the hard work and sweat put forth by every associate over that time. It reminds me that the second biggest mistake I have ever made after writing a business book was putting my picture on the cover of the original edition. Not only is that a tough thing to stomach, it's like watching yourself age in the mirror, it also doesn't give credit to everyone who helped the company reach the heights it has. That's why I made sure my picture is not on the front cover of the new edition. And that's why I'm dedicating this 20th anniversary of the Great Game of Business to all the players out there, wherever you are. You truly have the Agatawana. God bless.